Hi, everybody. This is your humble producer, Brendan. I wanted to jump on briefly, let you know that this is a very special episode of the show because we fucked it up. We recorded an entire hour with our guest, Alex Nichols, but due to a technical problem that I am choosing to blame on Amber's cats, Felix and Virgil's audio was lost, and I had to painstakingly reconstruct the first half of the taping and completely drop the second half. The good news is, therefore, there's one whole half of it intact, and the even better news is the second half wasn't very good anyway, and we have a better half now, because to our rescue came none other than wannabe thriller novelist and cucumber-shaped racist transphobe Ben Shapiro and his latest work, True Allegiance. The boys and Alex jumped on an emergency broadcast tonight, and we filled out the second half of the episode with a very fun reading of Ben's pathological and poorly written novel. So, without further ado, please enjoy this very special half-lost episode of Chapo Trapness. Welcome, everybody. It's another episode of Chapo Trap House. On a snowy day here in the Big Apple, only in New York, folks, in this crazy mixed-up town, could it be snowing. I would just like to note a bit of show business. If you did order the T-shirt from us several weeks ago, we are going to mail them to you this week. We just, you know, trust us. They're going out soon. You'll have your Chapo Trap House T-shirt. But I thank you all for being understanding. And, you know, not inundating us with the request. Like, where's my t-shirt?
Because,
I paid for something. God. You guys are stealing from me. But, no, you guys understand us. You understand our very specific sort of, like, work style and our organization, which is, it's very specific to us in the show. You are getting your t-shirts. We did not rob you.
Please be understanding, though. Ernest did take a dump.
Every one of them.
But they're all going to be washed.
Yep.
Most of them will be washed.
Well, I mean, they'll be washed if you wash them. we can just sort of assume that their people are going to want to wash them after they get them out and they see how much shit's on them.
And if you're a real fan, if you get one of the shit stained ones, that's a kind of like an autographed shirt in a way.
We're gonna do another run of t-shirts. We're gonna do a run of the Fail Dad armadillo design of Chapo Trap House. Those are gonna be $60 each, probably.
Hell yeah.
Because it's, you know, limited edition. But we're back again. Joining us this week is our good friend Alex Nichols, aka Loanashin. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a kind of a busy week, and I just, like, you know, right off the bat, I want to just do some meme news, meme magic, just on the Giamatti front. Matt, I just want to keep you updated that it's now crossed over into the teens, millennials, and hype beasts via Brandon Wardell.
I saw millennial Instagram comic Jash Columbine has taken over doing Giamatti memes, and you know what? I'm not mad about it. I think it's funny, and I'm laughing because the whole point of a meme is to get it out there and to make it viral. And if that means that, you know, a bunch of people who just recycle black Twitter jokes for a living want to make that a thing, then they can. Just get it out there. Let 1,000 Giamattis bloom. That's what I say.
As the saying goes, as goes Wardell, so goes sexual Jumanji.
There's a serious lack of John Adams Giamatti in there.
I've got plenty of Adams Giamatti.
You got like a couple, like, in there. It should be like the whole thing.
No.
That's his best
first
role.
First of all, no.
Guys, of course.
The goddamn Puritan has been heard from, and of course he wants more John Adams Giamatti. But I got to leaven it. I mean, if it was up to me, it would be nothing but him from the opening scene of Amazing Spider-Man 2 when he's like
the rhino,
got the bald head with the rhino, and he's like a Russian gangster and he's screaming and he's driving a truck and shit. Like, if it was up to me, that would be all of them. But I've got to balance it.
If it was up to me, that would be
Giamatti's possible.
If it was up to me, they would make a movie just about that character and spend $300 million on it.
Yeah. One of the many reasons that those movies are terrible and that they literally gave up and gave them back to Marvel because they realized they didn't know what they were doing.
I had a friend at college who he was like ripping shit, like torrenting a really big file, and he ended up getting, you know, suspended, or his internet service got suspended by the college for doing it, and it was the John Adams miniseries. Like, that was
educational.
That was the thing that got him like banned from the from the internet access, was trying to download that sweet Giamatti.
He's like, I gotta turn to my term paper on early America. It's time to BitTorrent John Adams.
That man will live in the Elysian fields of Giamatti in the afterlife.
That's the meme news for today, but other news went on as well, and I think the thing we should talk about off the top is the big news from yesterday, which is this quote, I'm putting it in scare quotes, declassified DNI report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. And I want to begin talking about this via this thing I discovered on the Washington Post called the Daily 202. Have you guys heard or seen this thing before?
What the fuck is 202?
The Daily, it's like this like daily briefing, like the things you need to know. And it's all done in this like stupid PowerPoint style. Let me give you a taste of it. Like this is how it goes. It's by a guy named James Homan. And it begins like this, in all caps, the big idea. And this is all in boldface. As the nation's top spies briefed Donald Trump today on how they concluded that Russia interfered in the election, the president-elect continues to isolate himself from the truth, from intellectually honest members of his own party on Capitol Hill, even from the Western alliance. There are few indications that the meeting will prompt Trump to reverse himself after 2 months of steadfast denials in the face of mounting evidence. But here's the best part. And this is the next, like I said, there are these really quick little paragraphs. And the next one, all caps, Trump versus reality. I love this because this is so in keeping with our style on the show. It reads like this. This is how he breaks it down for you. If a married couple is fighting at home and they look outside and see that a guy in an ice cream truck is trying to abduct their child, they don't keep arguing. There is nothing possibly important enough to keep arguing about when your child is in danger, or at least there shouldn't be. And now, in case you needed clarification on what this metaphor means, he says, the guy in the metaphorical ice cream truck is Vladimir Putin. The husband is a Republican, and the wife is a Democrat. The kids are the American people.
The guy in the ice cream truck is John Podesta.
I also like that he had to gender it, so the husband is a Republican and the wife is a Democrat.
Is this op-ed? What the fuck is this? This is very unhinged, even for the... It's a classic Washington Post feature on of a Saturday.
But it's all done in this clipped style of like pop quiz hotshot. A psycho is abducting your child. Do you continue arguing with your bitch wife, or do you do something about it?
I love that style of writing where it's like... what if David Mamet wrote the character of Chuck Todd?
But I think this is a good way to bring up this declassified report. I mean, I like this guy, James Homan, because James Homan.
Homan! Homan! Homan!
I love it because it just reveals just the essentially cucked mindset of the Washington Beltway journalist. I love it. But I don't know about you guys. I actually read this DNI report. It's only 25 pages. And Brendan, could we edit in now the audio from Brad Pitt in Burn After Reading going, this is the raw shit.
This is some heavy shit.
Is that my date list?
No, fuck. And it's these files, man.
I'm not comfortable with this.
Talking about SIGINT and signals and shit.
It's bewildering to read it because it's, again, like the Daily 202, is written in this clipped bullet point style that repeats itself over and over and over again, where it's like the summary of our findings, the sub-summary of the findings, the actual findings, and they all say the same thing over and over again. So it gives the impression like there's something there, but if you read it and try to discern anything of any actual information in there, basically the only thing they allege is that they don't even say the Russian government. They say actors associated with the Russian government got the DNC emails. Like got the DNC emails. Like they hacked. They keep saying actors in America. You know, like it's the Sony leaks. But they got the DNC emails and then disseminated them via Guccifer and WikiLeaks. Right.
I think that's the shit, man. The raw intelligence.
Well, I think you guys have said on the show before, we don't, you know, find it absurd that Russia could do this. It's not that we're saying like, oh yeah, show it. But there has been no evidence actually offered yet that the Russian government did it.
Well, if you boil this report down, basically what it says is, surprise, surprise, this was classified until just yesterday, but surprise, surprise, the Russian government attempts to counter U.S. hegemony through a variety of means.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite details in the report is it said, we have intelligence reports that people in the Kremlin were celebrating when Donald Trump... And it's like half of this fucking country was doing that too.
They were celebrating in the streets. I saw it. I promise. all the Slavic people, I saw it on TV.
They were doing that dance where they get down real low and kick.
They were doing the Cossack dance. Exactly. They were kicking their feet out.
I just feel like every time I read one of these reports about Russia... I open it up and there's just a smaller report inside, and I open that one and it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
And then you get to a Pornhub link.
I mean, here's the thing. And again, like we said, I think it's completely credible that Vladimir Putin and the Russian government would want Donald Trump to be president. Sure. And may have put their thumb on the scale and through a variety of means, legal and or otherwise, to make that happen. I don't find that really shocking or terrifying. However, the people who are absolutely stunned by this, mm-hmm. and are just so amazed, and their jaws hit the floor.
It's damning.
What is the follow up? That's what I want to know. What does any of this imply?
What do you want to do about it?
Yeah.
I have not heard, the only person I've heard with an actual plan for doing something about this Russian attack on our democracy was Louise Mensch, who had a comprehensive plan to literally start World War III. And like, other than that, I have not heard anyone offer what should be done as a result of this, what this means in terms of practical action.
Here's the thing. This report states plainly, if you read through it, that the guy who's about to become president is president because of a not insubstantial effort on the part of a foreign government. But we're still just going to go along with it. Right? Like, I just think that, like, this is all kayfabe. Like, I don't know what to make of any of this. Like, and where the fuck is Hillary Clinton? Like, she should, like, if she believed all this, she should have come out the day after the election and just said, I'm the leader. I got the most votes. He's corrupt. He's illegitimate.
She died.
Well, I've just got to say, I'm actually disappointed in you guys for being so short-sighted. Oh, where's Hillary? Oh, who actually, they don't really care. All right, I'll break it down for you right now with some game theory. Right now, in the woods of Westchester, New York, next to an old oak tree, is a giant pulsating chrysalis, inside of which is Hillary Clinton. When the time is right, she is going to burst forth from that cocoon, a glorious butterfly of American democracy.
Flies directly into a power line.
Become mayor of New York City. Make New York a sovereign republic, declare war on the United States / Russia, defeat them both, and create a new Hamiltonian democracy.
Fuck yeah.
I was going to bring this up later, but Matt, you got to it first. The speculation, again, yesterday, that people want Hillary Clinton to run for mayor of New York City.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God, yes. I hope this is true.
I want that more than anything in the world. I'll tell you
that
right
now. She's
going
to beat de Blasio in the primary, but then lose to Bernard Goetz in the general.
That's going to be amazing, though, because like the whole Bernie versus Hillary thing, all the Hillary men were talking about how Hillary is a WOC and black people love her and she's the only candidate for black people, even though her horrible record on criminal justice and everything else. And then they're going to have to somehow switch to arguing that, like, her Law and Order campaign against de Blasio is woke.
It'd be so funny if she attacked him for the CP time joke, which she was on stage with him at. Like, she just crops herself out of the video.
I so hope this happens.
She thought it meant child porn time. That's also the Eichenwald defense.
I hope she runs for, like, just offices of descending importance. Like, she loses the New York race, and we have, like, the Gambino family is in charge of New York for 4 years. And she's like, all right, I'm running for city council of Westchester. And loses to, like, a chipmunk.
No, Hillary, you know, obviously she listens to the show, and many of her or many of her surrogates and media people do as well. So please, I'll volunteer for her campaign. Moving up to going back, or segueing slightly back to CP time, which is Alex, I did want to talk to you about Kurt Eichenwald, right? Because he's a guy who's completely. Who's completely bit on the Russian conspiracy thing. He's fully dedicated to that, but also other things as well. Alex, you wrote a piece about Kurt in The Outline last week, and if you haven't checked it out, The Outline is the hip new online news outlet.
Very squiggly.
It's the squiggly news outlet. But we'll definitely link to it, though. It was a great piece. It was sort of like a profile of Kurt, and I guess I wasn't really aware of his career prior to his sort of meltdown this year, but like he used to be a pretty serious journalist, right? Like he did reporting on Enron and a couple other things of some substance, right?
Yeah, he actually did like legitimate pieces that didn't involve him clicking on child porn. And
but like you talk about how Kurt has become sort of a stand-in for the failures of the liberal elite, the sort of liberal media class as a whole. And you're right here, he's a scale model of the failures of the liberal elite. If Eichenwald is the voice of anything, it is of the sickness that plagues the Democratic Party. It's all there. Whitewashing of Bush-era war criminals because they presented mild criticism in anticipation of a Trump loss. A seething hatred of anyone unenthused about center-right technocrats. The portrayal of social media arguments as cataclysmic events. The steadfast refusal to accept Hillary Clinton lost because she felt entitled to the presidency and decided not to campaign in Michigan, Wisconsin, or rural Pennsylvania. And last but not least, a fixation on Russian interference in the election, which at best explains a small fraction of the loss in Democratic turnout. There's a few other things, like you talk about his back and forth on his politics, and that like he'll often write stories about Medicare scams at a time when the program is being cut. But one of my favorite details in the piece is his back and forth on who he voted for and when. And correct me if I'm wrong, he started out saying, like, I'll have you know that I voted for George W. Bush. And he originally said he voted for George W. Bush in 2000, and then corrected himself and said that he voted for Al Gore in 2000 and voted for George Bush in 2004, which is honestly the weirdest thing you could possibly do. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no less excusable vote I can imagine than voting for George W. Bush in 2004. Like you don't like fake news? You don't like, yeah, you don't like demagoguery and authoritarianism and fake news? How about fucking lying to start a goddamn war that killed a million people?
I think he said like something along the lines of, I just don't trust or like John Kerry. It's just, it's very odd. Like,
who does?
Well, you know, he had gay cheese on his cheesesteak. I mean, come on. What the fuck else do you want? But no, he also, I mean, he wrote about Enron. Fucking George Bush almost made Ken Lay his energy secretary. If 9/11 hadn't have happened, his connection to Enron might have ended up dogging his entire presidency.
And just like the general,
and Kurt's, this guy knew all about that shit, and it was just like a fucking he's keeping us safe.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. Like
it speaks to kind of his general evasiveness about these very basic questions about like politics and like what he believes and what he stands for, which I think leads into his evasiveness about. This is the white elephant that we're going to hopefully talk about now very carefully. And with a preface that this show is 100% satire and nothing we say on the show
and 100% clean
is legally binding or it constitutes slander in any way. We've alluded to this before vaguely, but like it genuinely is very odd and disturbing, like his backstory. And Alex, I really never understood what the substance of this was until I read your piece, because it was all just sort of out there and sort of vague. But could you lay out for us what the deal was with Kurt and Justin Barry and this supposed expose he did on child pornography?
So basically, he was in like 2005, I think. He was Googling randomly. And
as one does,
click on a video of underage boys masturbating each other. which happens constantly every day.
And yeah, then, no, I know it happens to me because I'll go to Google and I'll just like close my eyes and punch in words and then hit I feel lucky. And I've seen a lot of weird stuff, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he did. He pulled up that video and there was a boy named Justin Barry in it who was 18 at the time, but he was selling videos of himself like all the way back to 13. And he was also selling videos of other underage boys and stuff. And he was being helped by his dad and like some other creepy guy. Ugh. And like Kurt, like for some reason, like wanted to talk. He spent like 6 months like talking to him and like trying to cajole him into a meeting. Like he pretended to be a rock star and like they thought he was Don Henley.
That was my favorite part of that. Is it yeah. he posed to Justin, this teenager, sort of child porn star and mogul. And he set himself as he describes himself as an aging rock star, and then Justin Barry immediately leaps to Don Henley, which is very odd because why wouldn't you go to Pete Townsend first in this scenario?
Because it was Southern California. That's where
okay. The California Pizza Kitchen. Yeah,
Justin Barry demanded $2,000 for a meeting with Don Henley, which is pretty reasonable. Kurt convinced him to turn in all of his associates and stuff in exchange for immunity to prosecution and do interviews and stuff with him for his big article in the New York Times. And then it turned out after that when the editors found out that he had given Justin Barry like $5,000 or whatever and not told anyone about it, they got pretty mad at him and he left the New York Times in ambiguous circumstances. He didn't get fired. I'm not sure what happened, but he wasn't working there, and they put a note on the bottom of the article about former New York Times reporter Kurt Eichenwald and about his ethical issues.
Well, it's like very odd, like in terms of this payment, where he said he originally did it because he was interested in saving Justin, not writing an article or reporting on him, and he was interested in saving him. It was this kind of like Operation Rescue kind of thing.
But Justin was an adult at the time, right?
He was 18.
Yeah, so
yeah.
He was 18. He wasn't going to do child porn anyway.
I mean, but then he later was in some hearing and had to fess up to that there was more money than he originally said, and he said he forgot and that he doesn't recall
Yeah, because he had a seizure. He said he forgot.
Yes, he did.
He sent the child porn guy like $1,000 on PayPal because he had a seizure.
Is it conceivable, though, that a journalist who was interested in, exposing a child pornography ring would write an article and approach it in this manner?
Well, you're not supposed to pay sources, ever.
Right, that's a no-no.
You don't loan money. Like, he asked for the money back from Justin Barry, and he said no, of course.
I mean, again, like, this whole episode with him and Justin Barry is... It's very strange, and like I'll just say like draw your own conclusions from it, but it's very odd, and I think like it speaks to just how kind of skewed Kurt is. I don't know what to make of it, to be honest. But he's spun, like he's gotten even more spun since then, and like he's just like the way he's gone all in on this Russia thing and Trump, and he was going on TV saying that Trump was in a mental institution at one point with no evidence. And then didn't he try to say that he went on TV and said that as like code to one of his sources or something like that?
Yeah, he tweeted that Trump had been in a mental, he said, I believe Trump was involuntarily admitted into a mental institution in 1990. Then when he was on Tucker Carlson, when he had the Tucker Carlson falsehoods binder, he basically was asked for like 15 minutes straight, like yes or no, was he in a mental institution? And he just started spouting nonsense. Like he would not answer the question.
I don't know anything more on Kurt. I don't know what to say about him, but I'm glad we got that all.
What really broke him, Alex, in the past year or so? Because I remember him tweeting about these increasingly unhinged Newsweek cover stories about Trump, and each
they were
like,
always corrected.
Yeah, this is the one that's going to take Trump down, and it's either a very boring story or it's like bullshit
or previously reported. the Cuba story that he did, and then the one about the Trump Foundation, the meat of it had been, you know, and it's fine to be a reporter and to you know, build on something that someone else has originally uncovered, but they were already reported by Bloomberg before, and he just sort of reframed it as him breaking this amazing new, previously unknown story.
Yeah, like every few weeks he had one of these like amazing world-changing stories that was like Trump mowed the grass on his golf course too low. Or whatever, and it didn't really change anything because the only people that read Newsweek are people that are on layover at airports and their phone dies, and the only thing they can read is either like a $30 John Grisham book from the bookstore or Newsweek.
I mean, I think what it speaks to, like, you know, Kurt himself is an odd man who's getting stranger by the minute.
Stranger by the day, goddamn it. All right, motherfucking testimony time. Basically, what you want to do is forget that you PayPal a child porn star. Now, where a lot of people get fucked up is they forget to say that they have epilepsy.
I think what it speaks to is that, like Virgil, as you were saying, the fact that the libs sort of just bought it hook, line, and sinker every time, and now, as we were discussing earlier, are continuing to kind of believe that Trump is a Manchurian candidate of Russia, but not logically follow through on what that really implies about our what it, like, or what it, yeah. And I think it just speaks to like how totally unprepared all of these people are for a Trump presidency. And I've been thinking about it, and it just, I'm not prepared for it. I've talked about it before, like, just how fucking stupid this man is. He's probably in the modern era the dumbest person to ever become president, which is scary.
You have to handicap it for Reagan, who had like holes the size of fucking basketball courts in his brain by the time he got in there. But Trump he's obsessed with TV. God. He loves TV. He loves ratings. He loves talking about ratings.
Dude, the theory is like he was going at Arnold Schwarzenegger because of the Apprentice ratings. He's the president-elect of the United of the most powerful country in the world.
I'm 100% convinced that if someone was to say, "We'll trade you the presidency for getting Celebrity Apprentice back," he would take it.
Matt, you reminded me the other day that he has openly bragged about having never read a book.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he's happy. He's proud of it.
Terrifying.
Because his brain is so good, he doesn't need to sit down like a fucking idiot and have some moron, who's this dickhead who has less money than me, telling me things, making me read this book.
He's like that Mr. Fuck Show that. Sketch about how the more money you have, the smarter you are.
Yeah, that's right. So what do you think? Wrong. Whatever you were going to say doesn't matter because I make more money than you. That's if you're 80% of the public, so I'm right. Each year, Value Magazine ranks the 500 best people in the history of the world. In 1995, Steve Peters had no money. He was a public school teacher, so his opinion wasn't worth very much. But then, in 1996, he won the lottery, and he was a great man. Greater than Einstein, who made very little. But then, guess what this genius for a day does? He goes and gives his money to charity. Now he's about as dumb as Einstein. Way to go, Einstein.
Or the clip I saw of rapper Riff Raff today talking about why it was so hard for him to learn at school. It was because none of his teachers had a Bentley. And he was like, y'all, anything y'all trying to tell me ain't about where I'm going, so I'm not learning shit.
Man, that cat took a massive shit.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, what is that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I need more.
Oh, my God.
I wish I was there to smell it.
Oh, my God. I'm so uncomfortable.
Oh, my God.
It smells awful.
This is so bad. Why don't you guys just put newspaper down or something?
We don't have newspaper. We're not a print household. We're a digital subscription.
I need to leave.
I really got used to it.
I know.
Should we power through, guys?
Oh, yeah.
I wish we need to get some Febreze.
Is there anything we can do at all?
Can we take a break for a second?
Yeah.
All right.
Keep rolling, guys.
I don't understand this. Is it illegal for you guys to fucking scoop it? Is there like a law against scooping it?
Just pick up the poop.
Felix can't hear you, Matt.
Put it in a bag and throw it away. Yeah, that's what I have a cat.
It's illegal for me to do that.
I'm not doing that.
My cat.
Matt, you have a cat?
Is this all going to be kept in the final show?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm going to shorten this bit.
This should be bonus for $10 subscribers.
Well, you get 10 minutes of us cringing.
Before we started to actually record it, Alex, you said you were going to do a supercut of Chapo and Cumtown all the times that the cat has just shit in front of us or thrown up.
This is one of them, baby.
At some point I'll have to get to that. This is going to be this is a great addition.
Take him out!
Yeah,
what are you people doing?
He's
throw it out the window.
I mean, do you not have a procedure for cleaning a cat box? I mean, it's
crazy. It's like the simplest way to do it. Just throw it all out.
Yeah, just take.
We'll
help, but let's take the. Well, let's dump it. Let's just dump. Go outside.
Dump. You have a
dump
bag.
It out the window. Dump it out the window.
Alex keeps saying to dump it out the window, but we should definitely get rid of it because
is there not like a plastic bag?
Felix is doing it, guys. He's doing it. He's doing it. He's doing it. He's doing it.
Oh, this is the worst episode we've ever done.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
This is what people like about our show, is the badness of it. It's endearing.
I'm just glad it's gone. Oh, it's better.
Oh, thank God. Segueing out of our that cat shit sketch that we wrote and prepared for the show.
That's pretty good. That went down well.
You know, enough about politics.
They don't even have a cat. That's the real genius of these shows. There aren't even any cats in that apartment.
It's all improv.
Enough about politics, though. Let's transition into popular culture, which is better than politics. And we have Alex on, and of course I can't let you leave without getting your opinion on the hot new show of the year, The Young Pope. Alex, you are our official anti-papist correspondent. I know you haven't seen the show yet, but presumably you're aware of it, and I need your take on The Young Pope.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I'm not going to see it because I feel like it would be playing into the hands of the people who turned it into a meme and unintentionally did the work of the PR for HBO or whoever. But I think it's bad inherently because the younger the Pope is, the longer he's going to live and the longer amount of time it'll be before he inevitably goes to hell for subscribing to pagan beliefs.
See, this is why it would be interesting if we had Amber on here, because Amber's theory is that American Protestantism is actually way more pagan than Catholicism. And I was wondering what your take on that would be.
That's only if you're in Indiana or whatever and they're doing snake handling.
No, and good, if you're good New England stock, that's true monotheism.
Yeah. New England Protestantism is basically like a wishy-washy liberalism. Like you just go to church and like talk about how it's okay to be gay and like Black Lives Matter. Like every church in my town, other than the Catholic ones, has like Black Lives Matter and rainbow flags. It's way better than whatever they have out in the Midwest where they do snake handling and like electroshock gay people or whatever.
what are the stickers on the Catholic Church say? Pizza stickers ever? Fuck. No. Sorry, this kid. Sorry, the cats are being ridiculous.
Did they shit again?
No. Phyllis is just getting in a box on the. Even one is too much.
Okay, sorry. We're back.
We're back again. The subject is The Young Pope. Because to me, folks, I want to see a young pope, but Brendan Wardell. I want Brendan Wardell to be pope, basically. And I want him to address St. Peter's Square like one of those videos he makes where he says the same thing over and over again. Fam, I'm back. So that is the only real young pope that I want to see. Yeah, I want to see the Wardell Pope.
Canonizing Drake.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not a millennial pope, then what the fuck is the point? I mean, he's like a 50-year-old pope. What? Get out of here, Grandpa. Yeah, who gives a shit about a boomer pope?
What is the actual
he's basically a boomer pope
of that?
Fuck him.
Like, what's the premise?
He's a young pope. What the fuck else do you need to know?
There must be something.
He's a pope.
There must be something else.
He's a pope who's younger than
other
popes.
No, it's like a Francis moment sort of thing where, like, he's young and he's not doing things the same way as the old geezers and there's politics.
I think, though, that the twist is that instead of, like, the way Francis is trying to sort of liberalize the church in some ways, he's like a hardcore reactionary.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Right. Apparently,
that's sort of the twist.
Apparently, Jude Law
he's young,
is
but
quite
he's like a psychotic, like Opus Dei nutcase.
He's Matthew Walther.
I want him to wear JNCOs. I want young Pope in JNCOs.
What channel is this on?
HBO.
Okay, yeah, I get HBO.
And there's a that means that there's like a 0.25% chance that he fucks because it is HBO. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but could be a fucking Pope.
I would love it if like Douthit and that crew were like super excited about the young Pope because he's conservative and it's a popular show, but then like in episode 9 or something you see his dick and then they all fucking lose it.
Oh God. Yeah, the Douthit column the next week.
He just steps out of the shower, wow, and it's Jude Law's like uncircumcised hog. And they just hold it on a frame. They just hold the camera there. We are back. I suppose if you're listening to this, the last thing you heard was the cat shitting everywhere and the audio cutting out. But the truth is, we've had some technical difficulties. We're now recording this a day later. Amber has taken a vacation across the pond, and in her absence, her cats have gotten even more wretched.
They're awful. They're fucking awful. Ernest spent the entire show on my nuts, and Phyllis spent the entire show noisily searching for treats.
Basically, the cats were so bad it fucked up the audio on Brendan's computer, and there wasn't enough memory saved, and like a half an hour just got lost because of the cats and Brendan.
Definitely Brendan's
Everybody
fault.
Everybody in that apartment has toxoplasmosis.
Phyllis has figured out how to open a plastic sealed package of cat treats. They are evolving in new ways of being horrible. They're the shittiest children anyone could have. So, I hate them.
So basically, we recorded a bunch of shit yesterday that got lost. We're not going to try to do it. We're not going to try to recapture the magic. We're going to try.
Which is good, because it sucked anyway. Hashtag real.
I had one good joke that I remember.
But like I said, we got Alex back with us now, and we're going to create some new magic, and we're just going to go to an easy well, which is back to Ben Shapiro's rip-roaring thriller, True Allegiance.
Yay!
We had such a good time riffing on this earlier in the day, so I figured let's just go back to the text.
All right,
okay, it occurs to me that we've only ripped on True Allegiance in premium content. So for
you're right.
Freeloaders, you might want to give them a little context.
What the fuck
True Allegiance
was that premium
is.
Content?
Yeah,
it was Cat's episode.
Yeah, that was premium.
That was the last free one of the year.
That was free.
It was free. You
should do a recap regardless.
It has been a while. Okay. Yeah. If you guys, President Prescott, he just got done swatting a fly in a bathroom where he's sucking a guy's dick in the 57th state. Levon he just made a new hip-hop factory that forces homophobic people who own a bake shop to make them make Black Lives Matter gay marriage cakes.
Mm-hmm.
And the white Latina lady.
We
just introduced
Soledad Ramirez. Her ranch is under siege from federal SWAT team. Brett Hawthorne, the youngest general in the United States military, who is carved from granite with just enough hair to just like, you know, just enough hair is what I'm talking
about.
There's
this trail of hair leading down when he's shirtless, mm-hmm, and it's just so subtle.
Vascular, thick.
He just realized that Ambassador Feldkoff sold us out, goddammit, before passing out and being taken prisoner by the Taliban.
Also, Will, correct me if I'm wrong, but we also have a news peg for Ben Shapiro, a late-breaking one.
He's 5'4"?
Oh, no, that's not news.
Oh, yeah, that's not
news. No, I mean, he injected himself in the healthcare debate just the other night.
The reason that we were riffing on True Allegiance is because Ben Shapiro had a tweet where he was quote-tweeting Bernie Sanders, right? And he compared receiving healthcare to buying luxury furniture. And he was like, "Well, if you can't afford, I can't afford a nice sofa. Like, why? I don't have a right to it. Why should you have a right to health care? Crazy,
unimpeachable logic."
He'll get that height surgery one day as soon as he saves up enough money in his piggy bank. But let's dip back into True Allegiance, okay? Like I said, last we saw General Brett Hawthorne, he's been taken prisoner by the Taliban, and now I'm going to read now from we actually haven't.
we didn't actually read from this character yet, but there's a character named Ellen who is Brett's wife.
Who is a lesbian and, talk show host who normalizes sexual pathology?
No, the exact opposite, Matt. She is a loyal and faithful wife, but also a close aide and advisor to the governor of Texas, Bubba Davis, who we last, I think, I believe, heard in an angry phone call with President Obama, Prescott.
Yeah, he had the phone call with Prescott where he was like, I demand troops to secure my border and defend the Constitution. And President Prescott goes, I will call in a drone strike on you if you defend the Constitution at all. You hear me, son?
She is a loyal conservative wife. When her husband went overseas, she threw her computer in the Rio Grande so she could not be emailed.
He got so mad. Bubba Davis got so mad hearing the evil president sell him out that he pulled his six shooters and fired them into the ground and rose
them
off the ground.
Okay, so this chat I'm opening now. This is from Ellen's perspective. This chapter, Brett had lost weight. Funny that would be the first thought to cross Ellen's mind when she saw him on television, but it was. He was always so self-conscious about the 4 or 5 pounds around his midsection he couldn't shake. What he liked to call the famed Hawthorne underbelly. That had to be gone. He looked gaunt. That jutting jawline she loved to kiss looked like skin stretched taut over bone. He looked like death. That was her first thought.
Well, he really paints a picture with his words.
Okay, the first sentence in this chapter is Brett had lost weight. Funny that was her first thought. It closes that paragraph. He looked like death. That was her first thought.
Her it's second good thought. It's great writing. Terrific. Excellent editing.
Her second thought was this could not be happening. Her man, the man she'd married and who had cared for her and who had provided her strength, to whom she'd given her entire life, a man she had never questioned about his honor. The man she had never questioned about his honor, even when the front pages of every major newspaper in America smeared it with a knife to his throat. So basically, Brett Hawthorne is in an orange jumpsuit on his knees, Taliban knife to his throat. And he's been in a terrorist video.
What is the media reporting? Like, had it coming.
Yeah, they're like, that's what he gets for joining the army instead of selling crack with Levon.
He's guilty of being an apostate.
Yeah. the media is Salafist.
I just want to read, so it goes on, she's watching this video and just her heart sinks because she knows her husband and she knows that he will never negotiate with terrorists, even with a knife to his throat, even if it means his death. Ben writes here, of course, it wasn't exactly natural to have a knife to your throat. And that's what the network showed over and over on a loop. Brett on his knees in that orange jumpsuit with a man swathed totally in black. His face wreathed in material.
That's excellent.
Run it back.
Run that shit again.
His face wreathed in material.
Right, Bart L.A. Damn, son.
With a man swathed totally in black, his face wreathed in material, a knife in his hand.
That is the worst sentence I have ever heard in my life. There's no other way to put that. You've already said that he's covered in black. You can't add the face without saying, oh, there's a material on his face as well.
That's covered in so fabric terrible. And he's got product.
He sucks so in his bad. Hair.
Lieutenant General Buck Hardcock was standing in a place.
The prose really only sings when he is taking the position of a woman or a neutral third party, like really... like appreciating the male figure, like it's at those.
The only thing he's able to describe is a chin.
Yeah, the prose really sing.
Here, another bit from this chapter that I had to highlight. This is another like listen to how this sings. She had seen the end of videos like this before. The first installment represented the threat. The second installment invariably represented the fruition of that threat. The jagged trunks of human beings, the sawed-off heads that looked too much like a horror movie and not enough like real life. I was going to say, this is the only research Ben did for this book, was just watch ISIS beheadings to get this description.
Might as well not have bothered because he's still totally lifeless and worthless as a description.
So it says, she couldn't cry, not yet. She went to work as usual. She showed her guards the ID, and they waved her through. Two knocks on the door, and she stood across from one-time Republican presidential candidate and four-time governor, Bubba Davis. After a stint in Vietnam back in the late 60s, Davis, a big bear of a man.
Oh, no.
And
interesting choice.
Another bear of a man. All the men are bears.
I'm sorry, did you say fun-loving?
When are we going to get an otter of a man? It's inevitable at this point.
Governor Davis was never a glory hog. He had a glory-shaped hole in his heart.
Governor Davis played it straight. He would never crank the American people's chain.
So she's in a meeting with Texas Governor Bubba Davis, who's fed up with President Prescott and the damn federal government. And he just wants to let his border guard do their damn job and shoot Mexicans without being called racist rednecks. And he says, we're finally going to do something. And then they go back and forth, and you know he's going to do something. Moving along, that's Ellen's chapter. The next chapter is back to Soledad Ramirez, who's, like I said, the Sarah Palin Bundy Ranch character, but also a wise Latina. Listen to this line.
Ben, the term is Latinx, do better.
So her house is under siege by a SWAT team, and like all the shit is about to hit the fan. Listen to this line. What do you take with you when your entire world is about to burn to the ground? She'd come to the Central Valley as a girl, grown up dirt poor, watched her father make his living in the dirt. But instead of running from the dirt, as he always was... dirt. She made her living in the dirt.
Dirt never changes.
Yeah. So she, you know, she made something from nothing. And basically in this chapter, a SWAT team guy has a crisis of conscience and, like, breaks rank and warns her before they're about to raid. And she's able to escape before the federal government comes with the assistance of more burly men riding motorcycles and attacking a SWAT team. Yeah. Well, as Matt pointed out, and if you go back and listen to our episode with Kath Barbadoro, where we read from the first couple chapters, one of his first descriptions of Brett Hawthorne is that he's also a bear of a man. So they're
all bears.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all bears. It's a bear's world.
Unless you're President Prescott and you're a twink.
Yeah. I like how Ben has this inherently dramatic scene of a man about to be beheaded, and he spends three paragraphs about that and then talks about Governor Borderwall.
Yeah. He had been cut once before at his birth. But
see, I think that this is actually going to be a deeply dialectical work where we're presented with the thesis of the bears. Bubba Davis and Hawthorne, and then the antithesis of the twink, President Prescott. And from that conflict will arise the synthetic character of the otter.
Matt,
who will rise
there is
above
a third way. There is a third option. There is a third type. And that is the buck. And I'm talking, of course, about Levon. You'll remember him as the race hustler who orchestrated the shooting of a small child to start a race riot. Back in chapter 4. Let's check in on what Levon is up to. He's now at a rally to protest the shooting of this young boy by Officer Celtic O'Malley,
yeah. The
good cop who just wanted to go home but was told that, Cracka, I'm gonna bust a cap in your ass, and he just had to shoot the kid.
They're at a reverse racism rally. They want to kill Officer Bennigan because he killed little Kendrick Malone with a broadsword.
Mm-hmm. So they're at a rally. And it says here, behind Levon stood a solid 3,000 of his fellow Detroiters, mostly young black men. Levon had sent out his boys to round up the crowd, and they had had an easy time of it after the media coverage. Facing the crowd, protecting the statue and platform set up just before it, stood about 100 cops. Levon noticed a particular lack of weapons. He smiled to himself. He says, if they were too well behaved, the media would dismiss them. A bit of blood got them hot under the collar. A bit of blood made the story hot. Run that back, DJ. A bit of blood got them hot under the collar. A bit of blood made the story hot.
This is fucking Nano Remos. There are Nano Remos.
The way the media worked, the only way they'd pay attention was if somebody did something extreme. And then they'd defend the action, blame it on an overriding anger at an unfair society. Levon knew a few of the journalists from U of M. They'd done the same thing back in their university days. Made them feel good about themselves, less ensconced in white privilege. Levon had... Levon had his men ringing the edges of the crowd, ready to prevent any non-approved persons from getting too close to the media members. And by that, in Ben's mind, I think he's thinking like the African-American grandmother who's just being like, I want to talk to the media about how the cops are good.
Yeah.
They're doing their job.
In Ben Shapiro's mind, teenage Black Lives Matter protesters have the instincts of highly paid fucking AstroTurf publicists.
Well, that's what they are. It goes on here. No footage of fools, he'd promised the Reverend, and he intended to keep his word. Tonight, Levon intended to be the face on the news. Already, he'd done his best Malcolm X impression. Early Malcolm, not that late stage Islam means peace, oh. Pussy shit.
Okay.
Run that back. His best Malcolm X impression. Early Malcolm, not that late stage Islam means peace, pussy shit.
A lot to unpack here.
I'm just impressed that Ben wrote the word pussy.
Yeah. Wow, good for him.
Now, when I was previewing you for this, I said that there was the introduction of a mystery character that we hadn't met yet.
Ooh.
I thought we had met all the main characters in this story. No. Ben saves until about a third of the way through the book the reveal of a fifth character.
Oh, is this who
okay,
I think it is?
Okay.
This character's name is Mohammed.
Oh.
Yes. Yes.
Dateline, Tehran, Iran. Now this.
Thank you for specifying it was in Tehran, Texas.
Well, no, it's in Tehran, Iran, and the setup to this is that General Brett Hawthorne, rather than having his head sawed off by like the Taliban or ISIS, was shipped to Iran because they are in cahoots with the government of Iran.
Knew it. Okay. I mean, if you this is called Taqiya.
Yep.
It's what the Shia, the worst kind of Muslim, does. And it's where they pretend that they're being slaughtered by ISIS.
But just a front.
It's just a front. Yeah.
All those videos of like big ditches full of Iraqi soldiers.
They had 500,000 crisis actors gassed in Iran.
Yeah, dude, they're like Levon. They're like Shia race hustlers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like there's an Iranian Levon who's like, don't give me any of that don't give me any of that tech theory shit, yo.
Okay, so this is from Mohammed's perspective. He said, America has fallen. The transformation from Dar al-Harb to Dar al-Islam has begun. Mohammed watched, transfixed. Ibrahim Ashami's eyes glowed brightly, as they always did when he was excited. It was a peculiar quality that attracted many of his followers. They saw in that glow a fiery hope, warm and consuming. Hope for a new world. The teacher, they said, brought hope. Today's attack has ensured the crippled and weakened infidel giant that was the United States will never rise again. The emptiness and degradation of that perverse country has been wiped away, and the glorious reign of Allah has begun. Those that rejected Allah followed vanities, and Allah has destroyed them. I know this is audio, but I have a single finger in the air as I'm reading this.
I mean, this is the only good thing he wrote. Like, I agree with all of this.
Wait, is this just how they, like, these are, like, Iranian government guys, and this is how they kind of
talk? No,
that's how they talk to each other, yeah.
No. Ibrahim Ashami is not an Iranian government guy. It goes on. A drop of sweat rolled down Ashami's craggy face and embedded itself in his scraggly beard.
Wait, craggy?
Craggy. Scraggly. Ashami had lost weight in his 3 years in the mountains of Tora Bora, but he was finally putting it back on now that he was ensconced in his complex in Tehran. The government had granted it to him out of gratitude for his prior efforts against the great Satan.
Oh, so he's supposed to be like Mullah Omar.
Yeah, like pretty much. Except Iran is putting them up.
Yeah. Even though Iran, like, we cooperated with Iran militarily in the first days of the Afghanistan.
Well, it says Tora Bora, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a large Shia minority in the south.
Well, Felix,
it.
You'll like this. It says, out of gratitude for his prior efforts against the great Satan, with a yearly stipend that enabled him to live comfortably. In return, he had assured them that any efforts he put forth would be directed at non-Shia targets. It was a minor concession from him.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if there's anything about, you know, these, about Wahhabist terrorists that they are fine doing, it's to stop targeting Shia. It's not like that's their main thing that they do. It's also not like Iran was one of the first countries to, you know, offer condolences for 9/11.
Has Iran ever done a terrorist attack against the United States?
No. Well, there was the Marine barracks, but that was
Hezbollah.
That was a military. That was a military target.
They were fucking combatants. That's not terrorism.
But it's also like, we don't really know how many Shia have been killed in the last like 4 years by Wahhabist influenced terrorist groups.
It's got to be tens of thousands.
Yeah, but according to Ben, it's just like, this is just racist.
Well, that's the thing. None of these morons can get their heads around the idea of Islam as not a monolithic enemy. Like, the idea that there's any kind of real conflict within it. Like, they can't, because it defies their smooth-lobed understanding of the world. I remember I read a friend of my father-in-law like self-published a 600-page novel called The Devil's Playground, which was basically sort of a Clancy knockoff, very similar to Ben's book, about this attempt by it was written in the 90s. Saddam Hussein and Yasser Arafat to do a terror attacks across the United States to destroy the U.S. electrical grid. And then while America was totally thrown into darkness and chaos, Saddam was going to launch nuclear weapons at Israel. that's the plot of the book. And it's about as well written as the Ben book. But I will always remember this amazing moment from the book that just told me how what these people's understanding of the world outside of their like narrow image of it really is. He says, I'm paraphrasing, of course. It's been a few years since I read it. He says, Arafat then unleashed his most ferocious and fanatical fighters against America, the Shia. Like, the guy thought that like Shia Muslims were just like extra Muslims. Yeah. Like you had regular Muslims,
they're like the Navy SEALs,
and then you've
Islam.
Got Shia Muslims who are like samurai ninja Muslims with like extra like Muslim power.
Well, yeah, that's how they think of it.
That's how all of them think of it, including a guy who thinks he's smart, like fucking Ben Shapiro.
If you watch a video, a stolen dollar videos, every country, every culture has them. But if you watch them from the Middle East, it's all guys pretending to be a Shia. And the guy goes up to him and goes, "Do you know the people have died to wear that uniform, sir? Is your Mahdi hidden, sir?"
I think you guys are taking Ben a little too seriously here. I just want to go. So basically, Ashami is basically his Osama bin Laden character, who's now the guest of Iran.
Yeah, of
where
course.
Iran is letting him do his terrorism and keep General Brett Hawthorne and his chiseled chin hostage. I just want to read one quick description here. It says, Ashami pointed at the camera. Mohammed, his youngest recruit, an attractive boy of 17, struggling to grow a scraggly beard. Again, just check off scraggly. Craggy, this is the third time he's used scraggly to describe someone's beard in about 1.5 pages. So basically, Mohammed is Ashami's errand boy, and he's sent off to meet an agent of Russia, because as we've said before, they can't let... This book is 165 pages long, and Ben Shapiro is going to be damned if he doesn't fit every fucking conspiracy theory and grievance in his addled, childlike brain into every fucking page. So Mohammed goes to meet an agent of Russia called Andrei at a cafe that Ben describes as... like the only westernized cafe in Tehran that plays Western music, okay? He just wished Andre would show up already, even if this was a safe spot. He was getting sick of listening to the Western-style sinful music blaring over the speakers. What, he asked himself, does it mean to hit me, baby, one more time?
Are you serious? That was 1998.
Well, I mean, Alex, it's Iran. They're a few years behind the curve on sinful Western popular music. What does it mean to be bad and bougie, Mohammed thought to himself.
Oh, my God.
Are they threatening to rock the Kasbah? Presumed to what Matt said earlier, I think Ben does know the distinction, but he hates Iran so much more.
But I
never understood why that was. I know you explained it to me once, Felix. Iran's like a huge Zionist.
Because Iran is an actual, like, threat.
They Iran think they know that Iran
Israel
is,
in a fight.
Yeah.
Well, it's an old like weird.
They've kicked the shit out of Sunnis for the last 50 years. They're not afraid of them at all.
Well, it's a weird old deep state thing, and there is this like sort of grudge within the national security blob against Iran and against the Shia, and this tendency to think of the Shia as this massive blob, monolithic blob, which they're not, but. And it's because Hezbollah attacking the barracks in Lebanon, and it's also because Hezbollah capturing the station chief in Beirut, William Buckley.
Yeah.
No relation to the sailboat guy.
Sadly.
Different William Buckley. And they cracked Buckley, and he revealed a ton of secrets, and they humiliated them. And then, you know, Hezbollah humiliated Israel in 2005.
So you're just saying Hezbollah just keeps cucking Israel.
It keeps cucking, like, the Saudi, Israeli-American...
We would say that, like, Ben Shapiro is, like, a hog for humiliation.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, Iran is his daddy Dom, and he has to keep taunting Iran.
With their scraggly beard.
This is just the last section I want to read from here. This is the meeting between General Hawthorne and Ibrahim Hashimi. "Welcome, General Hawthorne," he said in a clipped accent.
What?
Brett's captors.
The famous clipped accent we know and love.
Brett's captors forced him to his knees. He felt them hit stone. Then he felt a sweaty hand remove the blindfold. Before him stood the world's most well-known terrorist since Osama bin Laden, smiling. "I hope you weren't too mistreated on your journey here," Hashimi said, turning his back to him. "We wouldn't want a famous war hero victimized by, how did you put it in your interviews? Barbarians?" Brett kept his mouth shut. He knew how this would go, and he knew the taunting presaged something far more frightening. Instead of listening to Hashimi's monologue, Brett quickly scanned the room for tools, anything he could use. He almost didn't notice when Hashimi turned his back around, thrust his face just inches from his own. Brett could smell his breath. "General Hawthorne," Hashimi said, "I know you, and that you are a resourceful man. I also know your country is a paper tiger and that your president is a weakling. Weaklings watch as the world burns around them, thinking they are safe because they have a mirror, and they are lost in the reflection. This is why your country will lose."
We call him President Selfie.
That's like Thomas Friedman levels of mixed metaphors.
Yeah,
the paper tiger and the mirror and like, what else was in there? There was like a Joker quote.
Yeah.
Like watching the world burn.
He's Islamic Joker, and I guess he thinks America is weak because President Prescott probably made a speech a week before where he's like, we're weak, we will not stand up to Islamic terrorism, and I have to go on a limo ride right now.
I just want to see her.
I'm gay.
I'm on my way to our pizza place.
I just like he says, thinking they are safe because they have a mirror. Ben Shapiro.
What?
Ben Shapiro thinks President Prescott is a parakeet, basically. Finally, Brett spoke. "America doesn't lose. We just convince ourselves not to win. You're the ones who will lose. We don't have to tape beheadings to frighten people into joining us." I think he plagiarized that from the movie London Has Fallen.
Yeah, it was a way better line in London Has Fallen when he goes, 1,000 years from now, you'll be fucking gone, and we'll sit like that. You know, it had pathos.
We don't have to tape beheadings. We just spent hundreds of billions of dollars in our poor kids' money on death fucking drones.
Well, listen to Hashimi's response here. He claps his hands in delight. "Oh, you Americans, you don't understand at all. You're delightfully out of touch. And I mean delightfully until you start dropping incendiaries on our children. You spend your lives fat and happy, eating at McDonald's. While you sleep, while you watch your reality television, your children abandon you, no matter how many Patriot missiles you send against us, no matter how many American troops we have to bury in the sand. You see, we offer something you do not, a reason to die."
Patriot missiles? When the fuck did he write this? That's some fucking Gulf War One shit.
Yeah, I also like how...
He was like 10 years old when that happened.
How
doesn't
revealing
really fit
is it
with the Never Trump brand to be talking shit about McDonald's and reality TV.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, I'd like to point out that Ben's, like, Islamic boogeyman sounds, his criticisms of the current situation sound pretty much exactly like Ben's.
Yeah.
Like, he's,
yeah.
This guy's about to say, like, and you let sickos go in the bathroom with your children at Target.
No, he pretty much does. He says, yeah. Down deep, they are afraid of dying without that death meaning anything. They are afraid they will die and that a life of playing Xbox and watching your American movies will leave them empty when they meet their maker.
A life of going on Twitter.
That's why the one guy, one of these guys I give credit to is D'Souza, who literally said, like, yeah, the radical Islamic guys are right about why America is bad. It's gay, guys kissing on TV. Like,
this sort of sounds like a... It sounds like an alt-right guy. It sounds like Mike Cernovich or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, horseshoe theory, baby. It's true.
Well, that's the occultation of the Mahdi. The Mahdi actually turns into a gorilla that doesn't jack off.
Your children take Prozac, and they are not taking nootropic drugs that expand your reality.
America is a paper tiger. Iran is a great gorilla. America keeps jacking off. Iran has not come anymore, and no one in our country needs shampoo.
Your children are fat, and they eat at McDonald's and not Applebee's, where they would learn something from an influencer.
That's the last thing I cap from this reading series, but I'd just like to describe what happens eventually. Is as the chapter goes on, and again, the chapters are about 2 pages each. But Brett, tricks you.
Yeah, that's Dan Brown style.
Yeah. He tricks
it's
you.
Trying to make it like compelling.
Ben tricks you because at the end of this chapter, it seems that Brett has agreed with Ashami to do a terrorist propaganda video. And you're like, no, Brett.
General Hawthorne, stand down.
No,
he
Brett.
He is no longer a bear.
And then in the next chapter is from President Prescott's point of view, and he's in like the Situation Room, the same Situation Room that President Obama and Secretary Clinton watched the Osama bin Laden raid on, as they like send a team into Iran to retrieve Brett Hawthorne. And they were able to do this because Hawthorne... He tricked his captors by blinking the GPS coordinates to where he was being held on camera.
They don't understand how Morse code works.
He blinked the GPS coordinates to where he was being captured in Morse code. Ladies and gentlemen, he's rescued, and then in the next chapter, he's in New York City. The book moves at a lightning pace.
How did he know the GPS coordinates of where he was?
Oh, that's funny, because Ben did say that he was brought in blindfolded.
Well, okay. Every U.S. Army Marine...
Marine Army Navy General.
SEAL pilot.
Quintuple General.
Yeah, is they... When they wake up, they, like, center their GPS, and they just start counting every step they take. So they thought they could get him by blindfolding him, nope.
I forgot about that. So Brett Hawthorne or whatever is a general?
He's the youngest Marine general in
and I guess he was, like, fucking in the front lines, and he gets captured, and President Selfie Stick is like, well, he was a bad general.
He was an attractive bear, but not my type.
Has an American general ever been captured in a war in the past 100 years?
No.
So that's this week's reading from True Allegiance, the Rip from the Headlines thriller. For those of you, people who bought this book also bought the Turner Diaries.
I need more of this.
I'm excited
for installment 3.
Like I said, I don't want to give too much away at the same time. I wish there could have been another good Levon chapter, but...
Let's go back to Levon.
Yeah, Ben tones down the race hustling in these past chapters. Levon did have that very good line about no more of that Islam is peace pussy shit.
Well, I promise you, the race hustling like goes into overdrive in later chapters.
Oh,
I bet it does.
Yeah.
How far are you in the book? Halfway?
I'm about halfway through.
Oh, okay. Are you reading it too?
I skimmed it after we did the first reading series, looking for more of those erotic scenes about scraggly beards and jaws. And, you know, it's a little late night kind of reading.
Yeah.
Seems like a common theme is guys who can't grow facial hair. Every time someone's mentioned, it's like how you can very clearly see their chin or their... Their facial hair is craggy or scraggly or crappy or whatever.
Again, I'm just like, we noticed this in the first reading series, but like, I just love his tick for just repeating words and phrases over and over again.
The dirt thing
was bizarre.
And it didn't even make sense because it's like, wait, what, did she make her fortune as a dirt farmer?
Yeah, there are humble dirt farmers on Naboo.
I think Ben's next project should be to write conservative Avatar. Like the president selfie stick makes a space empire, and they go to a planet where everyone's a conservative.
I think
and
Ben's
people
next...
go to the right bathroom.
Here's Ben's next project. Dear Dabiq Forum, I never thought this could happen to me.
You know what we should do is we should look up those Goodreads reviews of Ben's book. I think I read you guys some of those off camera. Because his book did, like, how did it do? Did you ever look up
those
statistics?
I didn't find out the numbers on Ben's book yet.
Because I think, you know, if his publisher won't go for more, I think we should just pay him to write more, because this is great.
We could write.
Well, actually, I think that's what we should be doing, actually, yeah. Writing our own True Allegiance.
The vast majority of the people listening to this right now could write just a way better book in, like, 1 month's time.
Easily.
No question.
But, like, in the same way that incorporates, like, every conservative, like, you know, bogeyman of the last 10 years into a thrilling narrative.
So I bet at the end of the book, like, President Prescott, like, you know, of course Hawthorne's never in any real danger. He, of course, gets back through, like, resourcefulness and...
No, he's already back. He's in New York.
Great.
It happened in one chapter.
Great. Anyway, so yeah, he gets back and he probably goes to, like, all the characters come together to, like, arrest the president because that's such a conservative fantasy. And Prescott, like, he turns to the Marines. He's like, you're not going to save me? And one of the Marines goes, after you saluted me with a latte, like, just, they're all in there. All that shit.
Actually, can I, Matt and Alex, can I get your predictions for where True Allegiance is going next in future chapters?
The last chapter is going to be President Pussy trying to eat a dog. The dog is going to be a badass army dog.
It was like
it's gonna be like a police dog, and it's gonna just bite his neck.
You know the X Prize, right?
Yeah.
If anyone out there is an eccentric billionaire and you'd like to do something as a lark, come up with a prize for the five of us, plus Amber and Brendan. You know what? Plus Nick Mullen too.
Yeah.
To all of us, write a sequel. To this way, an unauthorized sequel, and judge the best one.
What do you win for the prize?
Oh,
$20 million.
$1 million?
$20 million.
So I'm content with $1 million.
I'm not.
I'm a socialist.
Okay.
Oh, I have a thing. A listener asked me to talk about the audio of John Kerry saying that they, you know, allowed for the rise of ISIS to use the leverage against Assad. We did actually talk about that.
I think
in
we should
audio
say
that
for
lost.
A next show.
We can talk about it next show, but just someone wanted me to talk about it, but I'm just explaining why it's not there.
I just want everyone to know that last time there was just, like, probably 45 minutes of cats shitting and throwing up and people yelling and people not knowing how to pick up cat shit.
Yeah.
That was my favorite thing, is finding out that Felix doesn't know how to pick up cat shit.
Yeah, like, you just, like, leave it there and, like, wait for it to decompose.
It's not complicated. You just pour it into a trash bag and throw it away.
I mean, I did that. It's not like I didn't figure it out eventually.
You took the entire litter box outside.
Okay, well, I'm not the one who... They're not my cats.
Okay.
Yeah, fucking, that's...
Okay.
Yeah, President Prescott.
President Prescott over here. What does it matter?
Yeah. What difference does it make? We actually ate cats when I grew up in Indonesia.
The cats are shitty because they don't have enough treats. We need to give them more treats.
Allahu Akbar, everybody. I'm a gay homosexual.
I'm going to go smoke crack with my cats. And you know, I'm going to take a tour around all 57 states, spread the wealth around. And I'm a pedophile.
I'd just like to remind all our listeners that you did not build anything. That or anything else.
We built that.
We built it.
If you like your doctor, you can keep it.
If he's a gay homosexual.
The video that caused Benghazi was actually, it was a film about Islam that depicted the prophet in a bad light. And when I was watching it, I spit out the dog that I was eating.
All right, guys.
Goodbye, everyone.
Until next time, producer Brendan, roll that Brock Winthrop to go out with.
Yeah.
2017 banger. This shit slaps.
Peace.
See you next time, guys. Bye.
See ya.
Down to the morgue. store in her hair. Charles Oak and Maine woolen white, a wedding dress with walnut dye, a glance. It's like dry ice and Leland Palmer's wake. Everything is gonna be okay. Charles Seymour's grave, a morbid pun. To my surprise, there wasn't one. I wanted to plant columbines at Charles Seymour's grave, a morbid pun. To my surprise. Charles Seymour's grave, a morbid pun. To my surprise, there wasn't one. I wanted to plant columbines at Charles Seymour's grave, a morbid pun. To my surprise, there wasn't one. I wanted to plant columbines at Charles Seymour's grave.